This is Air Commander Starscream, and you are listening to Half Measures. Half Measures? Sounds like Megatron's battle strategy.
Kia ora, and welcome to episode 161, take 2 of the Half Measures podcast. Kia ora, Paul. How you doing?
Kia ora, Dan. Take 2. What do you mean?
This is Half Measures first. So for long-term listeners, we've been recording weekly episodes, since about episode 5 or 6?
Yeah, I think something like in the first 10 episodes. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and we don't miss an episode. Like, the only time we've missed an episode to date is for the Queen's passing, rest in peace. And any other time that we've had any technical disaster, we're normally so organized that we will re-record that we'll move hell and high water and we'll re-record that episode and make everything perfect. This time, true peek behind the curtains, we ran out of time. We had no more time left. We had to miss an episode. We had an audio fail. It was a disaster. Paul and I were in tears. There was no episode 161, but now there is episode 161, but the world is out of balance.
Everything's out of balance now. Every week that would have been odd is now even. I feel like we still did our bit, you know. We still recorded. It was the technology that let us down, so we were here. No one can point the finger. Well, maybe they can point the finger at whoever had the dodgy microphone cable or whatever it might have been.
I did think about that, Paul. I was like, should we actually just call it 162? Like, we'll just like skip 161 altogether, and it's just like a black mark in the Wikipedia pages of Half Measures. But
like a mystery to everyone.
All right. Well, look, let's jump into it. I already know what you've been watching because I've already heard you talk about it once. But entertain me again, Paul. What have you been watching this week?
It's really handy, actually, because it's been a hectic week and I was coming in pretty dry this week. So it's almost as if it was meant to be because, yeah, not too much. But I do have a full season for you, Dan. This is 10 hours of absolute pure goodness as far as I'm concerned. This is season 1 of Poker Face. Act surprised. Yeah.
Wow, I've never heard of this one. Tell me all about it.
So this is a really, really top quality show. This is from the creator, Rian Johnson, who you and I have talked about at length for his work, particularly with The Last Jedi. This series centers around a character called Charlie, who has an extraordinary ability to determine when someone is lying, which is just straight away I'm hooked into that because that's great because we all want to know when someone's lying. Anyway, she hits the road and every stop along the way, she encounters this new cast of characters and strange crimes that she can't help but investigate and solve. And I tell you what, this is a great way to spend a week or so of evenings watching TV for me. And I think alongside when we talked about The Last of Us, this is my first big one I'm bringing to the pod where I'm saying, you may hear me talk about this come the end of the year because this is quite an exceptional show.
I've seen the ad for this one pop up quite a few times and it's, for some reason, I guess it's probably maybe the closeness to the, is it the poster or the cover art, you know, of the is it Russian Doll where Natasha Lyonne sort of plays a, not a similar role, but like it's a, you know, she's sort of front and center. And I think one thing that really stands out to me with Poker Face, because it does look intriguing, is just its amazing cast. Like there's so many, like Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Alan Barkin, Nick Nolte, Ron Perlman. Like it's incredible. Like there's so many big names in this TV show.
Yeah, there really is. There's a lot of good performances. Alan Barkin was great. Cherry Jones was another one who came up with a great episode in amongst it. But as you say, in the lead role, Natasha Lyonne, who I thought she was just fantastic in both seasons of Russian Doll. And of course, she's well known for Orange is the New Black. She's superb. She probably was what drew my eye to it. And then I discovered it was Rian Johnson. And then I was like, okay, this has to be what she's so watchable. She's so just, I think, she puts so much into the performance that you just every step of the way along her journey, because she goes through quite a lot, and there is this underlying story as well. So each individual episode, these 10 episodes, is one crime, and each new location is relatively encapsulated within that episode, and yet there is this underlying story that unfolds from the first episode, that you immediately empathize with her because she's the innocent party and yet she's the one who has to go on the road. And so that long story arc is really, really, really compelling. But yeah, she's just really, really strong in terms of her performance. She's got this incredible accent that she brings and a great voice. And honestly, I feel like I could watch her in anything.
It reminds me a little bit of did you ever watch that TV show Lie to Me? Where that guy could sort of like,
right, yeah,
more of it in that sort of professional setting, could walk in and he could bust kind of anyone kind of lie, and it would always sort of do a bit of a deep dive into their body language. This feels like the more fun version of that story.
Yeah. Oh, fun is a great word to use as well, because the whole way along, I would never describe this as being comedy, and it's not a genre that it's sort of filed under in any sort of platform that I've seen, but it is exceptionally funny throughout. The writing is top quality, and you know, the Rian Johnson writes and directs a couple of the episodes, but he's the producer throughout. He brings something to the table that I just always, you know, there's a vibrancy, there's a color, and what he does with this one is he gives it a something akin to what I would call a Tarantino look and feel at times. It's modern day, but the feel of it is kind of a little bit old, a little bit 70s, a little bit sort of that. There's just something in the production quality that comes through that you really notice.
Even the poster sort of says a 10-part mystery series, almost kind of has a bit of a Knives Out type, yep, vibe or feel about it.
Yep. So if you like his Knives Out work, again, I think you're going to enjoy this. The one complaint I do have about this show is, and I kind of said it in the synopsis earlier, is she goes from place to place, and every single time without fail, she winds up discovering a crime, and then she goes, you know, she's hellbent and trying to solve it. But as I say, that's kind of the premise of the show. So I think once you sort of accept that, that's what you're going to get each time you press play on the next episode, you kind of get past it. And I think if they didn't do that, I'd probably be sitting here saying, oh, it's just filler. And then, you know, I'm sort of like, I'm never happy is a thing. But I don't want to say too much more about this show, because this is one I recommend to everyone. And I think if you do end up watching it, the less you know, the better. But yeah, just real top quality, Dan. Really, really top quality.
I'll tell you, like, it's interesting, and it's great that it's another early top 10 contender for 2023. The one quirky thing I find with this, and this has nothing to do with the TV show, is this is on our free-to-air platform in New Zealand. And not that there's anything wrong with that platform, but it feels like the type of show, just looking at it, that you would find on Neon. But strange that it's not.
Yeah, oh, the quality of it is one that, you know, I take my hat off to our, you know, TVNZ here in New Zealand that managed to get some really great quality shows. I find myself bringing a lot of their content to the podcast, and of course, because it's free, that makes it even more appealing. But no, there's a quality to this that you really want to appreciate it in HD as well, despite that sort of 70s look, because the color palette, the style, the attitude, everything is just spot on. She's kind of got a Columbo vibe going on for me, because she just seems so unassuming, and yet she's figuring it all out every step of the way. And you kind of see something unfold and you think, that's not going to be possible to pin on that person. And then in comes Natasha Lyonne and she does the rest.
Amazing. I feel like, Paul, if I didn't know you and we didn't have this podcast, I'd have little to no clue who Columbo is. But I feel like because of you, I have an instant visual every time you mention his name.
Alongside Bosch, Columbo is the single greatest American crime TV show ever, as far as I'm concerned, that has a police angle. Absolutely brilliant.
Fascinating. That's good. So I guess you can watch that on TVNZ here in New Zealand, and I think I'll be adding it to my list.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this and actually be able to sort of go in deeper and spoilerish, because there's so much content under what I've talked about. particularly, I'll be really keen, if you do go watch it, I'm really keen, Dan, to hear what you thought of the episode with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, because that one was a real special one too.
Okay, I will add it to the list. And anything else for you this week, or that's...
No, as I say, I've been hectic and I've got a couple of things I've started, one of which I'm going to bring in next week, which will be finished. But no, for me, other than the movie of the week, Dan, that's all I've got. What about you?
All right, I've got a couple of things for you this week. So the first is a movie that I watched, which I watched this movie as kind of inspiration after watching the movie of the week. So that movie is In Bruges, which is a bit of an oldie and a classic. So this movie came out in 2008. It's basically about two hitmen who are basically asked to lay low in Bruges in Belgium. One of them absolutely hates it there, can't wait to get out, which is Colin Farrell. The other one is kind of like, okay, let's have a bit of a holiday while we're here, which is Brendan Gleeson. And it's kind of the ultimate dark comedy. And I don't know why, Paul, but I just have never seen this movie. A lot of people have talked to me about it in the past. I know a lot of people rate this movie. And for whatever reason, I've just never sat down to watch it. And I think, well, I kind of had this perception that it might be a little bit slow and a little bit boring, but it couldn't be anything further. Like, it's so funny, it's so dark, it's got great drama, fantastic cast. In particular, Ralph Fiennes appears in this as one of the sort of the core gangsters, and I think he plays such a dark role. And at times, I was like, is this our Voldemort? Is this you know? But it's, I just had a hell of a lot of fun with this. And I don't know whether it was kind of having watched our movie of the week and then sort of coming to this and kind of like looking for more of this type of sort of humor or sort of storytelling, but this ticked a lot of boxes for me.
This is a great movie. And yeah, Martin McDonagh as the writer-director is just superb. And when I look across all of his work, there's so much in there. In fact, I've just realized I haven't seen The Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which, of course,
it's so good.
Yeah, is another of his. So I've got to get it onto that. I would say, just as a sort of quick synopsis, I would say In Bruges is probably the best of his work for me. I find it to be a really compelling, funny watch. The Ralph Fiennes character, as you say, when he's not Voldemort, he's so often playing a posher person, well-spoken. Mm. But in this, he's so common, and he's so, you know, there's that sort of Guy Ritchie-type style voice to his character that is unusual for him, but he delivers it so, so well. And, of course, the main event, Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson, the two of them together, as we've seen before, absolutely superb.
And I think that, you know, that's the good shout with the Guy Ritchie sort of link. It very much feels like a Guy Ritchie movie almost in the way that they tell the story. It doesn't quite have the slick, fast edits that a Guy Ritchie movie often does, which sort of tells a sort of rapid, fast-paced story. Mm. But this is kind of a well-told, deep story with lots of kind of meaning, like things that happen in the start of the story kind of loop back and have a big impact on the rest of the story as it progresses. But look, this is on Netflix. This is if this was a movie of the week, it would be All the Guns for me.
Yeah.
I think I just had such a good time, and I think there's something about those sort of dark comedies that sometimes just hit just right, and this was one of them, because just the notion of these two hitmen kind of having to lay low in Belgium and taking little river cruises and getting involved with sort of local antics while at the same time this sort of dark undertone story of we're hitmen hiding out here and chaos kind of follows us is so much fun.
Yeah. Oh, it's really inspired me to go watch this movie again, because I don't think I've seen it since it came out in 2008. And yeah, it's, I dare say, just sort of rewatching the trailer there, it's aged really well too. As has Colin Farrell, he doesn't seem to have aged a day. Top quality, Dan, top quality.
Indeed. Check it out on Netflix. The other thing that I've got for you is, this is a little bit different, I guess. This is a little six-part sport documentary reality TV type show. And I randomly came across this one on Apple TV, and it's called Monster Factory. So Paul, I often sort of talk to you about my fond memories of growing up watching the WWF or the now known WWE, and I occasionally, like, you know, I really love that TV show Heels, which sort of talked about, you know, I can't wait for season two. It was so much fun. Every now and again, I find myself down a YouTube wormhole of wrestling sort of memories. Like the first cat I had as a kid was this ginger cat, which I called Hulkster. It was, you know, like it's in my blood somewhere. So seeing a TV show that, you know, sort of documentary type show about wrestling is always a bit of fun. And what kind of appealed to me actually about this one is it's 6 episodes, 30 minutes long, and it basically follows this wrestling school in Philadelphia called the Monster Factory, and people from all walks of life kind of sign up to this school, and they just commit to their love of wrestling, and they're not only there kind of, you know, learning the moves, practicing their craft, they're getting involved in all aspects of it, whether it be like cutting promo tapes, working out their characters, putting up the ring, selling tickets to the show, promoting it locally. And you know, there's all the jokes about, you know, wrestling isn't real and, you know, all this. But I think that the things that these people are doing, like you're putting on a show, you have to be athletic, you have to practice, you know, if you do something wrong, you could end up not only hurting yourself, but, you know, severely hurting someone else. So I think there is a lot of sportsmanship to it. And I think the show has quite a bit of heart in terms of the people that it focuses on, and I think the different walks of life they come from. Obviously all of them want to try to sort of make it to the big leagues. Some of them are successful, some of them are just on the journey, some of them have been there for several years and starting to realize that actually maybe this is as big as I get in the wrestling world. But yeah, this was a lot of fun and something a little bit different.
And very high quality production by the looks of it, watching the trailer here. This is, you know, Apple TV Plus, so very high production values. I think the showmanship side of things, I'm not sure what the gender neutral word is for that, showmanship, come back to me on that, but that side of it has always been the angle for me that is most appealing. There are, you and I will often go days at a time where we'll quite happily just communicate most things we were saying through wrestling gifs or memes or whatever, because it's there's just that side of it. But the physicality side of it and all of the stuff that goes into the work, I can see it coming through in this trailer. It looks like, I would say, it would be a fascinating insight. I think the fact that it is essentially a documentary, because it's behind the scenes of the realities of this, is that it's so easy to forget of all the work that goes on behind the scenes to bring what is, you know, one of the most biggest things in entertainment.
Well, I think too, it reminds me a little bit of, like, it's obviously not on the scale, but, you know, when we talked about Welcome to Wrexham and, you know, we sort of talked about the community behind these types of sporting events. And it's the same here. Like, you've truly got these local people who are so invested in this. And this is kind of like they're literally in their ringside. They're cheering, they're crying, they're celebrating the wins, and they're mourning the losses, and it's kind of just, there's something heartfelt about it. And I think it's like, this is a high production quality show. They've got some great kind of, I think, graphic overlays on some of the scene. It's obviously filmed in kind of high definition. If I was going to sort of be a little bit hard on it, I would say the 6 episodes don't probably really go far enough. I wonder whether it was a bit, in terms of like concluding some of the stories or giving you enough, it very much feels like maybe a bit of a test. Like, do audiences want this? We could probably do a few seasons of it if there's interest. And I wonder whether that was sort of part of the trial. So if anything, it's kind of left me wondering where some of these people are now and whether this is going to pick up for a second season. But as I say, at 30 minutes a pop, it's a pretty easy watch.
And as I said, this is Apple TV Plus. So yeah, that quality is definitely there. I'd say this has still got a ways to go in terms of getting audience numbers, because this has only been out a couple of weeks and it may yet pick up. Is there a second season there, Dan, or do you not think that's coming?
I wouldn't be surprised if there was a second season. I think what's interesting is, so on IMDb, it's had at least 100 people rate the TV show, but it is sitting at an 8 out of 10.
Mm.
A lot of the episodes are sitting, you know, they're quite highly rated.
Yeah,
that's what, for the small numbers, yeah, so yeah. They're in the nines. And so I don't know how many people would sort of come across this TV show and kind of, as I say, like, the bit that really sort of like drew me in is, you know, I quite like having something different to talk about on the pod. I like when it's something sort of a little bit of reality TV is fun, that the short episode length, it kind of ticked a few boxes for me. I wouldn't be surprised to see a second season. I don't know whether Apple TV is the right place. It's great that it's on Apple TV. I think to get the eyeballs, it probably needs to be on maybe a more mainstream viewing platform.
Yeah. And is there did you spot amongst these new up and comings, is there a new Ric Flair in there, a new Hulk Hogan?
Look, I don't think I'd go that far, but there's definitely some interesting characters to watch in there. I think what's is I'm so out of the loop of what of wrestling, you know, like I miss the old days of that wrestling. But yeah, it just brings up so many fond memories. In fact, it makes me sometimes think about, like, should I play the PlayStation wrestling games, like, just to try to get back into it? But when you don't know the characters, I don't know if it has the same appeal.
And that's the thing, the characters, the showmanship and all the things that go behind it, the characters is the thing that I can see from someone looking from the outside, and I see the appeal there. So this is a good find, Dan.
Yeah, so check that out on Apple TV if that sparks any joy. Shall we jump into our movie of the week?
Indeed. So every week we take it in turns to choose a movie to watch and review. We announce what the movie will be a week in advance over in our Discord community, which you can join if you click on the link in our show notes for this week's episode. And then 7 days later, we review it. Dan, what have we gone for this week?
This week, Paul, we are reviewing The Banshees of Inisherin, which is directed by, how do we say his last name? Martin Mc...
Well, I'm not sure, but I'm pronouncing it Martin McDonagh.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that makes sense.
We need someone Irish to tell us exactly how it's said.
Thankfully, we have two Irish friends who listen to the pod. So I'm sure we'll get some updates on that. So this is obviously this movie here, and I had such a good time watching this movie. It inspired me to watch In Bruges. So the basic premise here is, again, starring Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson, two lifelong friends, basically all of a sudden find themselves at an impasse. And Brendan Gleeson's character decides to end the friendship. And what is fascinating and interesting about this movie is you never really understand what happened in this friendship to cause this sudden disruption. All you kind of really see it from is Colin Farrell's point of view, that he doesn't know why they're not friends, and he'll do whatever it takes to rejoin the friendship. I had a fantastic time, Paul. How about you?
I really enjoyed this movie too, Dan. I had a number of questions throughout, and the biggest one that you just alluded to there was, what is it that Colin Farrell's character has done that's annoyed Brendan Gleeson so much? Because typically, friends don't split up per se. You know, it's the sort of thing you associate with, you know, a marriage, a boyfriend, a girlfriend, whatever it is. But friends, typically, unless they go their own ways, they don't do that. And of course, these two guys are not only in a remote place, they're on a remote island off the coast of Ireland, and it feels like they'll be lifelong friends to, you know, for decades to come. And now all of a sudden, what, they're going to live on this small island and not talk to each other?
And I think too, like, their friendship is kind of, it seems such a simple friendship too, right? Like, they're basically they meet at the pub each night. Yep. They have a couple of beers together. They share some stories, and all of a sudden, to kind of take that away, just it feels so, like, it leaves you with so many, like, why, what is going on? And there's all this kind of other stuff going on within this island community. There's crazy relationships with the other people that live on the island. They've all got their own dramas going on. And I really found this was a TV show where you're trying to piece together all of the pieces, but you don't have all the information, and you kind of have to feel comfortable that you're never going to have all that information. You're not. It's almost like you've just kind of arrived on the island, and you're going to be exposed into the day in the life of what these people are going through.
Yeah, and it's really appealing, actually, this lifestyle to a certain extent, the location, the remoteness of it. I thought it was, you know, if I had a good internet connection, I could see myself, you know, if we had no kids at home, I could see myself living there quite easily. It would seem like a real peaceful place to go out. But the side of it that is why I had a good time watching this is the Irish comedy. It is, as I've said before, some of the best comedy in the world. And when it's done right, it can be just exceptional. And the writing here, the dialogue, the back and forth is just superb. And when I think about that alone, I can see why this film got all the reviews and got nominated for 9 Oscars, you know, Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor, Best Supporting Actress, just everything. And the big one for me, Best Screenplay, because it's the story here and the dialogue. And, you know, as we go through this journey, we have two very different contrasting emotions. You're laughing all the time, but then some of the time, then it's really sad. It's heartbreaking. It's, in some places, it's depressing.
I think too, like some of the dialogue is just so top tier, and I think it, like you were saying, it kind of takes you on a bit of a journey where, you know, sometimes you'll be laughing, you're like, should I be laughing at this? And like, you know, one of my favorite lines from this whole movie is, I'm not putting the donkey outside when I'm sad. Yeah. And just, you know, Colin Farrell's character, you know, who he really loves his pet donkey, and he just hates the idea of keeping it outside. And I think the way that the friendship between Colin and Brendan kind of comes to a bit of a heated moment is sometimes experienced through the animals. And I think it just adds a whole nother layer of complexity and mystery to the whole thing.
It does. And the thing is, you don't know what you're getting going in, but you do know something's, because we've seen, as we talked about within Bruges, you've seen these two together. You know that the chemistry is going to be good. But because, of course, they're at odds with each other throughout the film, it creates this really interesting dynamic, which I didn't see coming into this movie. And Brendan Gleeson is so hell-bent on not having Colin Farrell in his life. But Colin's character will not. He just won't accept that. He keeps wanting to come back. He keeps wanting to try and make things better. And you feel for him every time he does. But the lengths at which Brendan Gleeson's character will go to say no do become quite extraordinary, to the point where you realize there's some severe mental health issues going on here in amongst this dark comedy.
Well, I think too, like, not only that, like, we've also got these, you know, we sort of touched on before, you know, these other characters like Barry Keoghan, who plays the son of a policeman, and he's been abused by his father. He's been beaten up. He's kind of, I get the impression he's kind of been bullied for a long time. And so not only have you got this, you know, this deep tension between our two main characters, but it's kind of a lot of grim situations surrounding these characters as well, which kind of makes you just sort of feel the hopelessness and darkness of the island as well.
Yeah, no, it really does. And I think the mention there of Barry Keoghan, he is extraordinary in his role, even though it's a minor character, that he adds a whole dynamic to this movie. He's quite extraordinary. He is, he played the Joker in the cutscene of the Batman. He played a role in Chernobyl, and he's played a role in Dunkirk. And each time he comes in, he adds an exceptional layer to whatever it is he's doing. And this is no exception. Also mention, I guess, Kerry Condon, who plays the sister, who we know from Better Call Saul as Stacey Ehrmantraut. She is very, very good as the sister. And these characters, I love this small knit community, all these quirky little characters. There's the one that was sort of dressed up almost as a nun. I still don't understand what her character was doing and how she got about the island. O'Riordan, who owned the grocery shop. All of these things come together to bring, there's no escaping this other than leaving the island. There's no escaping this. And Brendan Gleeson has no intention of leaving the island. And of course, nor does Colin. And for me, they're all extraordinary, but Colin Farrell is the one that steals the show for me in this movie. And I've said before about his performances being really ramped up over the last few years. And the last 15 minutes in this particularly, I think, are extraordinary, because the level of his performance is just something where he goes from trying his hardest to actually realizing finally he's been cut. And the hurt, the resentment, the hate, all of those things, it was just really powerful.
And I think, so this is where, you know, I know when I'm not smart enough to really get the true undertone of a movie, then I have to turn to Google and say, what is the meaning of this movie? And it was really interesting, and I think this is what kind of, I think, made me appreciate this movie even more. Like, what is the message, the meaning they're trying to give us with this movie? And my understanding is this is actually sort of reflecting the largely pointless civil war that Ireland went through in the early 1900s, and it's kind of reflected in the movie. You know, it's obviously, you can hear cannon shots, and you see smoke in the distance, and you know, there's sort of the referencing there's something going on, but they never truly sort of talk about the civil war. But the friendship is the representation of the, you know, tearing families and communities apart, and almost sort of the pointlessness of war.
Yeah. Oh, look, I admit as well, completely lost on me that point. And I wonder if, I imagine there'll be a lot of people who did get the point, but the pointlessness of, you know, that whole, whatever it was with Brennan's character reflecting that is really, really clever. But the balance of this movie, Dan, as much as I enjoyed it, the pitch, the feel, something isn't there that enables me to say, when would I rewatch this movie? Because I don't know what emotional place I would need to be in, just because I know what's coming now. Like, I wouldn't be going into it thinking, oh yeah, I need a good laugh or an internet comedy. But it's not a Saturday night action movie. It's not a Sunday morning on the couch. I don't know what it is. And that's my one thing that, even here we are a week later, Dan, doing it again, I still can't come to terms with quite.
It's interesting though, because watching this movie inspired me to watch In Bruges, because I just love the dynamic between Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson. And now, knowing what I know about the movie from a sort of Civil War point of view, I could see myself giving it another watch in a year or two's time. Just, you know, if I was maybe kind of on a sort of a bit of a bender of this genre of movies. I appreciate what you said. I don't think it naturally fits in the instant rewatchability camp, but I think for me, interesting enough to probably give it another go.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And I'd be really interested to hear what anyone else thinks, because, you know, we've talked many times about the coming together of comedy and drama and how it can be difficult at times. And I think the thing for me is the balance is, it started off feeling like one movie and it finished being something very different. And so I think when it's ups and downs the whole way, maybe it's slightly easier. And yet I still come away from this recommending it and admitting that I had a good time, for all of the reasons we've talked about around the performances and the writing.
And I think this is something I said in the first time recording this, and not this time, but I actually came into this movie when I first started watching it thinking, oh, is this going to be for me? And I think because it turned me around so quickly, I think it's kind of challenged me a bit. Oh, actually, try out these things a bit more. So, look, I had a good time. This is one that you can actually watch on a couple of places. I think you can watch it on Disney Plus, and you can also watch it on Prime Video. But the big question, Paul, what is your Guns Akimbo rating on this one?
I think I'm going to come in with 3 guns. Dan?
Going all the guns. All the guns.
I thought you might.
you might have predicted it. So, yeah, look, this is, it's good. This is, I think, a surprise and delight for me. And I don't think it is for everyone, but I think if you like some of those other movies, like In Bruges, 3 Billboards, 7 Psychopaths, it could be one for you. In fact, in saying that, oh yeah, no, that's right. I was going to say I've just said Seven Psychopaths because I just presumed that was in the same genre.
Yeah, that's another one, which is,
and it is
on the. I added that just as I was looking at what was the other one I mentioned that I said I hadn't seen that you said's great?
Three Billboards Outside Ebbing.
I added both of those at the same time because I remember seeing the card for Seven Psychopaths and I'd never got around to watching that. So yeah.
I'm going to really go off topic, Paul. When you say you add them, do you add them via IMDb or do you just like add them mentally to your, oh, well, you manage your list that way. That's quite.
IMDb is the first place I generally add it. And then since we're going down this rabbit hole, I then take the time to then add that to my Just Watch app. And Just Watch sounds like a product placement advertisement. It's not, is an app that when you search up a TV show or a movie, it will tell you if it's available in your region and if it is, on what platform it's on. And if it's not available, then it will alert you when it becomes available and if a new season for that show becomes available.
What are we even friends, Paul? First of all, I don't know about this. All I have is a spreadsheet in like a Google Doc, which is not
basic
what to watch. It is what I have watched. Like, that's all I've got. And I've been keeping it ever since we've been doing the podcast. It's I'm not even forward thinking. I'm living in the past.
There's a number of different apps. In fact, I got put onto this by my brother-in-law a couple of years ago, and I talked to him about it recently, and he said, "Oh no, I've moved on to another one. I forget what that was called now." I just find it really useful, and it's also for shows that if you sort of forget that there's a new season coming, and if it flies under the radar, and I think a good example of this was Shetland season 6 that suddenly came along. The app will notify you when it comes out. So, yeah, Just Watch.
All right, Paul, the big question. Beyond the Guns Akimbo, what has been your top watch of the week?
For me, it is a clear poker face choice. It's a really extraordinary show. It stands out, and as I say, because it's top 10 material for me, which is not something I say lightly after the drama of last year and trying to fit 30 shows into a list of 10, I'm confident this show will be in the 10 then. What about you?
Very nice. I think I'm going to go with In Bruges because I think I've been sleeping on this for far too long. And I think if you're looking for this sort of slow burn dark comedy, I just think that one ticks so many boxes for dark but fun and a great story. It just can't go past it.
Love that. News time, Dan.
News time. All right. So I've got a few things on the news desk today. Probably to your surprise, Paul, they're probably new things from what I talked about last week because, you know, the world keeps spinning.
It does.
But let's see. First of all, we've got our first John Wick spin-off, which is going to be coming to theatres next year, and it's going to be called Ballerina. So still haven't caught up with John Wick, latest movie, but look, I can't wait to see it. I'm intrigued at the spin-off. We've also got the TV show in the works, so, and more movies. So interesting to see what they do here.
Oh, John Wick is I think going to be what looked back on as one of the classics for the genre that it is. I really think it's high quality.
Indeed. Paul, brace yourself. They're working on Shrek 5 and they're looking to bring back the original cast. This is big news. So there's a lot of love for Shrek out there. And I think to bring back the originals would be so good. Combined with that, they're looking at doing a Donkey spin-off film. I don't know about you, but I fell off the Shrek wagon after the first movie. But look, I'm sure a new movie in 2023-24, I'm sure would be a lot of fun.
I remember enjoying them, but more than anything, it's Eddie Murphy as Donkey. I mean, I would watch a whole spin-off with Eddie Murphy just as Donkey. Absolutely brilliant.
Could be a lucky day. There is a Harry Potter TV series in talks at HBO and Max Warner, and it's looking like it's kind of looking like a bit of a reboot of the Harry Potter movies, and they'd be looking to make each season one of the books. What do you think about this?
Oh, I personally, can I say I love the idea of them doing this as a reboot rather than an extension of. I think, going off topic briefly, thinking about the Rings of Power, what I would love to have seen was a TV adaptation of the story I already know. I think that's what I would have really loved. And so the idea of them doing that, I love. It's a dangerous territory, though, of course, the recasting. But I always point to the recasting of the original Star Trek crew and how they did that with the J.J. Abrams movies. And I thought, I think once you get past that shock factor, if you're on board, you're on board.
Indeed, indeed.
Exciting.
Should be interesting. I imagine there will be a lot of drama that follows this. So we'll be talking about this for, I imagine, a while to come here on the pod.
Mm.
Chris Evans thinks that there is more Steve Rogers, Captain America Fupal, stories to be told, but he is conflicted on the return. Does he want to come back? He has kind of retired the character. He doesn't want to mess it up. I'm kind of with Chris Evans here. Yes, there might be more stories to tell, but I just don't know. I would almost be wanting to, you know, there's so much stuff happening in that Marvel space. I think it's time to give it room to breathe.
I will take the fifth on that one. I just don't know enough.
What else have we got here? Oh, this is very exciting news. So let me rephrase that. This is some very good news. Paddington 3 is officially happening.
Wow.
I can't take credit for that. I stole that headline off the internet, but still, it's incredible. I'm a big Paddington fan. Look forward to talking more about that as more details emerge. A couple of final things. So there is a Game of Thrones prequel reportedly in early stages of development over at HBO, and it looks like it's going to focus on Aegon Targaryen's conquest of Westeros. So, look, give me more Game of Thrones, Paul. I've been really thinking about Game of Thrones of late. That I'm ready for a rewatch. I'm ready to go back. I think I've forgiven some past crimes.
this is human behaviour. You say, I'll never do that again. And then time heals all wounds and you go back again.
It does.
You go back again. My one comment here would be, if they've got the resource and the money to make another show over here, can they bring that resource and money towards getting season two of House of the Dragon quicker?
Well, I think this is the interesting thing, right? Like, is it actually better to have two shows on the go that you can kind of alternate so that people look a little bit like the Walking Dead model, right? So
true.
It doesn't feel like there's such a wait if you're kind of like alternating each year. You've got a different show coming back, though it can be a bit confusing and you can oversaturate your market. But anyway, the show goes on. So one final bit of news from me. So MCU's Fantastic Four movie is getting a rewrite from the Avatar, The Way of the Water writer. So Josh Friedman is going to pen the script. And so interesting that it's getting a rewrite kind of, I get not late, but kind of this movie's been in the works for quite a while. So obviously they're going to want to get it right. They've had a few goes at Fantastic Four in the past, and they obviously haven't landed in a true MCU fashion, so this one is going to be important. But, Paul, that is me. Any news on your end?
A couple of things. Firstly, just following on from your analogy around The Walking Dead, the Fear the Walking Dead final season is now just a month away. The trailer for that has dropped. I've avoided it thus far, but this is a show I'm glad is coming to an end, not because I'm sick of it, but just because I think it has hit some high notes over the last few seasons. And I think rather than trying to stretch it for 12, dare I say it, this could be a good place to end it. And I hope they do it in a way that's worthy of the show.
I have watched the trailer. I'm pre-triggered, and you can expect more more complaints from me in the near future.
Pre-triggered is a word I think I first heard you use a while ago, and I don't know that many people ever use it, but it is a really great descriptor for how I often feel about many situations in life, to be pre-triggered. It's great.
It's great, isn't it? Wish you could put that on a t-shirt.
Something that's not pre-triggering is the announcement that Strange New Worlds was renewed for a third season, and that season two is coming on June the 15th, and Lower Decks renewed for a fifth season. That is a real indicator of how successful this animated show is. Season four is coming out later this year as well. And there's also a new Star Trek series that's in the works called Star Trek Academy, which cutting a long story short, sounds like it could be a bit of a Star Trek 90210, which does worry me because I'm just concerned as to what that might look like. But if they do it right, it could be a really fascinating thing.
Interesting.
A bunch of cadets growing up to become part of Starfleet. I mean, it's the dream, but does it translate well on a TV show? I just don't know.
They're down at the Peach Pit. They've all got like their fancy hair. They're getting beamed up. Look, it's
they're getting beamed up. Everyone's getting beamed up.
Everyone's getting beamed.
That's all the other pieces of news that I have, Dan. I'll take us into the mailbag for a couple of things. Firstly, Jim Field-Smith, the director of Litvinenko, which I talked about a couple of podcasts ago. He shared our Litvinenko review on Twitter, which was great. Jim, who is also the creator of many shows that we enjoy, including Criminal, and he once described in writing, it's there on Twitter if you want to go and find it, this podcast as a thoughtful discussion, and that remains some of the highest critique we've received from the industry, from the creator of that fantastic show that you and I both enjoyed.
If you could buy Half Measures like on a cassette tape or something at like JB Hi-Fi, and it's like, you know, someone like writes the review on a little card and puts it underneath it. A thoughtful discussion. I like that.
That's right. JB Hi-Fi is great for that because they do have underneath their products. Yeah,
the handwritten.
The staff actually take the time to put in. And that's something I think that store is head and shoulders above many others because they take the time to actually give that individual thing. And that's what it would say. It would say, Half Measures, a thoughtful discussion. So thanks, Jim, for sharing that review. Bit of review feedback, sorry, Dan, on our Luther review, which was from a couple of weeks ago now. Firstly, we had Matt from Nelson, who didn't rate this movie as highly as us. In fact, he went as far as to say he thought we oversold it a bit because he thought it was, and I quote, a bit all over the place, which was his opinion, which I think is a fair point. I think we did touch on a few things that didn't work for us, like the Piccadilly circus part, or a few convenient dodgy plot points. But I appreciate the view, Matt.
I think what Matt's trying to say is we had a thoughtful discussion on this topic.
That's a really good interpretation. That's manager speak, that is, Dan. That's really good. To be fair, I think the ratings for this movie, since we discussed it, have gone down a little. And I think maybe across the board have reflected a view that maybe is in line with Matt's assessment, but I still had a great time with it. Still with Luther, Dan, Mark from Wellington, he was surprised that we didn't notice a glaring production error, and that is that the scenes that were filmed in Scandinavia towards the end of the movie when Andy Serkis, it should have been completely dark. There's no way it could have been that light for the location and the way the sun and the, you know, those places on the, I mean, I like the detail, but it feels like a full measure for this attention to detail.
I think the fact that I couldn't work out how Luther ended up in jail probably kind of speaks to my level of intelligence on these things. There's no way I was going to pick that up.
And one last thing on Luther, another piece of feedback, which is great. Liz from the northwest of England said that she listened to our review and agreed with a lot of things we said. But in particular, she thought that this would have been a lot better as a series rather than a movie. And I love this point because this is something we often say, you know, about a movie or a TV show, or it was too long, or it should have been a movie, it should have been a TV series. Again, we're never happy, right?
We're never happy. And I think this is the risk that they were running with us, is I think this movie length, Luther, was meant to attract a new audience. And I think if they'd sort of come in and said, this is Luther season 6, you would have already instantly lost half the people who might have been able to give it a go. But at the same token, I think because the true Luther fans, like Matt from Nelson, probably like it in its more classic kind of format, it did feel different. And I wholeheartedly agree. I would have much rather had the classic Luther format. But I also understand what they were trying to do from a marketing perspective.
Yep, indeed. But thanks again to Matt, to Mark, and to Liz for the feedback on Luther. Always bizarre when we get three pieces all on one thing. Dan, before I go on the mailbag, the last thing was peak performance. The last peak performance was Noomi Rapace. We had Jason from Porirua, who went with the Millennium Trilogy, which when I looked it up, I was discovered it was actually a TV adaptation of all three movies of the Dragon Tattoo, Hornet's Nest, Playing with Fire. So going back to that comment from Liz, that was someone, that was a production company actually saying, do you know what, let's put something out there that satisfies both audiences. So that was quite good. Crescendo Podcast, based in Auckland, they agreed with you, Dan. They went with Prometheus for their top performance for Numi. Ash from the Manowar 2 went with Jet Ryan, and I completely forgot that she was in a whole season of that. Diana Capity Coast, she went with The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo as well. Michael Chalmers from North Carolina went with Lam as his third choice. Amazing performance in a very bizarre film. Haven't seen it. Second place was Prometheus for the alien pregnancy scene alone. She deserves it. And number one for him was also Girl with the Dragon Tattoo trilogy as well. That is the mailbag this week, Dan.
Where's Paddy Mahal?
The fantastic Mr. Fox has had now 2 weeks to get his peak performances in, but has neglected to do so, and that has been noted on his school report.
Wow. I'm going to get my people to get in touch with his people, and we need to do something about this.
Correct.
This is unheard of. We're missing an episode. Paddy's not writing in. No good. Should we jump into our peak performance for the week?
Indeed. So like our movie of the week, every week Dan and I take it in turns to choose someone from the industry and try and pick out what we think is their best work to date. And Dan, this week,
Paul, we are looking at Mr. Hugh Grant. So sometimes I'm gobsmacked that we haven't actually covered someone like Hugh Grant. Like, he's just in so many movies that we've talked about, but we've never actually sort of singled him out. So for me, honourable mention this week, I'm actually going to go with Hugh Grant's role, and this is probably a little bit of recency bias, but his role is Phoenix Buchanan in Paddington 2. Mm. So not only are the Paddington movies absolute top tier, Paddington 2, Hugh Grant plays the villain in this movie, and obviously Paddington is he's an icon in the UK, and I think it sort of feels like of course he would want to be in this, but at the same time it feels like such a crazy movie for him to be in with a digitally rendered beer. But honestly, so much fun. And I think Hugh Grant kind of just, he gives it his all, and you can tell he's having a lot of fun playing Phoenix Buchanan as this thief that's running amok in London. So that's my honourable mention. But for my actual peak performance, I'm going to go with 2019's The Gentleman. So I think Hugh Grant's role as Fletcher in this film, just like I think he just had the smarmy, kind of, I don't know if it's creepy is the right word, but he had the real sort of smarmy, greasy, criminal vibe really down pat. I think this movie is one of my favourite Guy Ritchie films. I think that the whole cast sort of brings it to life, but when I think about this film, I think about Hugh Grant's character as Fletcher, and again, I just love it when I see an actor really kind of like have fun with their character and kind of, you can tell they're having a good time, and I think this was a great example for me. So Paddington 2 and The Gentleman, how about you?
Great choices, Dan, and for anyone not from New Zealand wondering what Dan was talking about when he said bear, he was indeed referring to bear. Always a favourite New Zealand pronunciation. I could talk about that on a whole podcast as well. I'm going to pick up on what you were just saying there, Dan, for my honourable mention, because my honourable mention is 2019's The Gentleman, a movie that you and I reviewed as one of our very first movie of the weeks back in the day, going all the way back to 2020. I mean, I would have loved this movie whether he was in it or not, but the thing for me was just this whole, when I think of Hugh Grant, this role was just something completely different. It was a real point of difference for him next to anything I've ever seen him in. So enjoyable seeing him in a role like this. It's kind of similar to what we were saying about Ralph Fiennes in Bruges, in sort of like that sort of that typically posh British actor actually playing something a bit more commonplace. It was almost Pat's like a brick top character or something from another Guy Ritchie movie. It was just such a great thing. It's actually inspired me to go watch Operation Fortune to see what he's like in that. But yeah, absolutely superb. I'd love to see him take on more roles like this as we go forward. But peak performance for me, I am going with a classic, and my pick is 2003's Love Actually. I just think he's so believable as Prime Minister. If he was somehow made Prime Minister, it wouldn't surprise me or shock me. It just feels like he would really fit that quite well. I love the fun he has with it in the role, how he gets, like, he maximizes his poshness, his upper class toffiness, and you know, he's never been more English. So good in this. The scenes of him dancing, you know, I've said before, I'm not always big on dancing in movies, but this really works in here from a comedy perspective. Also worth watching him, just as a side note, reprise this role as PM in the Love Actually special they did 15 years later for charity. He tries to recreate his dancing scenes around 10 Downing Street and discovers that his body's too old to pull off all the moves. But yeah, as Prime Minister is my peak performance then.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I think, you know, Hugh Grant was kind of like, he was famous and he had that kind of big incident, and it kind of like put him in a, like it kind of shifted his, I think, the fan perception of him. But I just feel like over the years he's really just made such a big comeback, and it's great.
Yeah, he just seems like a largely likable person. I've seen him in a couple of interviews where maybe he comes across somewhat differently, but overall, when I see him in a cast, it always inspires me more to say, oh yeah, let's press play on that one.
Well, Paul, that brings us to the end of literally another episode of 161 of the Half Measures podcast. Fingers crossed that we are technical error free. But yeah, that's us again for this week.
Let's see if there's a take three coming. Let's hope not. Thanks for listening in. Get in touch with us with your suggestions for a peak performance for Hugh Grant, or feedback on what you thought of Poker Face, what you thought of the Banshees of Inisherin, or anything else on our website, halfmeasurespodcast.com.
Also, a very special thank you to our Patreon producers, Samara Whiting-King, Diana Kanawa, Trisha Brady, and Michael Chalmers. If you too would like to become a Patreon of the show, then you can find those details in the show notes below. But until next week, everyone, adios.